All right, well, good afternoon, everyone. This is an informal hearing on case numbers PU-15-592, PU-17-192, and PU-20-417. It's an informal hearing regarding light mitigation time extension requests, and I also believe transfer of a site certificate citing application, or are we keeping the conversation to...
Just to the lights, I think is the
lights.
Issue.
Okay, we've got the three consolidated cases apparently, but is that correct, Brian? In terms of presenting it properly,
I believe so.
Okay, all right. It is 1:35 p.m. on Wednesday, October 21st, 2020. I'm Commissioner Brian Crosius, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchak and Commissioner Randy Christman. I don't have any opening comments, Commissioner Fedorchak.
I don't have opening comments either. Well, I'll provide the context in a second.
Okay. Sounds good. Commissioner Christman?
I do not, thanks.
Okay. We also have Brian Johnson from staff. Before having the company introduce the people that they have on the call, joining the meeting, this is an informal hearing involving only undisputed facts. If there are any disputed facts, we will close the informal hearing and issue a notice of notice of hearing. Again, the applicant will go first in this type of proceeding. We've introduced who is on our end. If the company would introduce the people that they have participating, and then at that point in time, I'm going to hand it over to the portfolio holder, Commissioner Fedorchak.
Good afternoon, Commissioners, and thank you for this informal hearing. This is Carl Liebitz, Assistant General Counsel with MDU Resources. Also participating today, we have Darren Holden. He is manager of generation facility operations with the company, Joe, director of generation, and Travis Jacobs, director of regulatory affairs. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Commissioner Fedorchak?
Okay, very good. So the company submitted this application. I think I read it last week, maybe. It was not that long ago, but there was a sense of urgency on it. I thought immediately that it warranted a discussion with the company and with the three of us. And so I thought it would be best to just get this discussion going as soon as possible. I don't know if you, what I envisioned is maybe you guys would present what it is you're asking for here and then we could have a discussion about it. But if you would like to proceed in a different way, that's fine. But I wanted to give you guys a chance to lay out your case, which you did fairly well in the application, but I think it would be good to just review it, and then we can set the stage for a discussion. Does that work, Carl?
Yes, that's excellent. We can dig in if you're ready.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. So as you set up, you know, absent an extension under current North Dakota law, MDU would be required to equip both Thunder Spirit and Cedar Hills wind farms with light mitigation technology. The current deadline as it exists would be December 31st of 2021. So a little, you know, 14 months from now. North Dakota law does provide that the commission may grant an extension of time based on technical or economic feasibility considerations. So MDU has filed applications with respect to both Thunder Spirit and Cedar Hills to give MDU an opportunity to install a lower cost light mitigation technology based on the exception for economic feasibility considerations. So MDU has received multiple bids for two alternate light mitigation technology systems. There is the light intensity green solution, which as of today has not yet been approved by the FAA. And the alternative system is the aircraft detection lighting system, which is currently approved by the FAA. So just to review the numbers, so for Thunder Spirit, the ADLS, or aircraft detection lighting system, the estimates we received to purchase and install the system is between $3 million and $3.3 million. That system also requires an annual maintenance service agreement which the range of that is between $29,000 and $58,000 on an annualized basis. And that system would also require us to go out and obtain two additional land leases to house those systems. And we would estimate the annual expense of those additional leases to be around $1,500 each, or a total of $3,000. For Thunder Spirit, the alternative system, LIDS, Light Intensity Dimming Solution, which again is not yet approved as of today by the FAA, the cost of that is much lower. So the initial purchase and install costs are estimated around $672,000, again, as compared to the $3 million for ADLS. And there is no annual service agreement or additional land leases required for that system. For Cedar Hills, we see a similar contrast in cost. So the ADLS system, the estimates range from $1.5 million to $1.7 million to purchase and install that system. The annual maintenance service expenses would be approximately $29,000. And we would anticipate requiring one additional land lease at an annual cost of $1,500 a year. For Cedar Hills, the LIDS system would be much less, at approximately $200,000 to purchase and install that system. And again, there's no additional service agreement or land leases required. So due to the significant opportunity to save costs, we've been waiting for FAA approval, and we have filed the applications to extend the time within which we would have to install the light mitigation technology. So the request specifically is that the commission extend the time to install the light mitigation technology for both Thunder Spirit and Cedar Hills until the earlier of either 1 year following the FAA's approval or decision to deny LIDS 31st, 2022. And the thought behind that was, you know, we expected a decision from the FAA, I think, in August of this year. That hasn't happened. We would hope it would happen soon, but recognize that we can't delay it forever. And so that's why we put in kind of an alternate date trigger, if you will. Then, you know, while we urge the commission to approve that extension and request, in the event that the commission would not approve that extension, then we would request a extension. We would proceed with the ADLS system, the more expensive but currently approved technology. But due to the lead time and procurement and installation, we'd be looking for an extension out to just June 30th of 2022 to make sure we can get that installed in a timely manner. So that's a brief overview of both the applications, and I'll try to hit the highlights. With that, I turn it back to you, Commissioner Dorchek, for any questions. We have the experts online and available.
Very good. Thank you, Carl. Just could you restate the first request, that you want a one-year extension from the time that the FAA makes a decision on LIDS? Or what was the second piece of that? Or restate it if I got that wrong.
Yep, so we're seeking an extension. It would be 1 year following the FAA decision to either approve or deny. So once they come out with their decision, we'd have a 12-month period to move forward. If they approve, of course, we would move forward with the lower cost option. If they deny LIDS, then we would move forward with the higher cost option. But then we put as an alternative, we recognize that the FAA could drag out their decision indefinitely. And so we put a backstop of December 31st, 2022.
What would happen then? If you don't have a decision by then we'd give you another year or half, year and a half for ADLS?
No, our outside deadline to install would be December 31st, 2022.
You'd have, if they hadn't approved LIDS, you'd have the other one installed and operating by then?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Tell us about the FAA decision-making process on LIDS. What do you know about it? Where is it? What are their concerns that you're hearing? Have you talked to the vendor? You know, just give us an update on that, please.
Yeah, and so I'd invite Darren to Darren Holzer to jump in on that if you could, please.
Absolutely. Thank you, Carl and commissioners. So we've been staying engaged with Technistrobe, which is the LIDS technology manufacturer, trying to gauge the timeline of this approval process. And originally, they started this process up in Canada first, followed by the U.S. FAA about a year and a half later. And it took about 6 years for approval in Canada. And it's a two-phased approach, which I just learned this week. So apparently there's a kind of a lab study performed of this technology. And it has passed that through the FAA. And then they install these on structures out in the field, and they fly planes around, and they adjust the intensity, the luminous intensity of their technology as they fly planes around. And so that part of it passed as well. So the technology has been approved by the FAA. It's waiting kind of the second phase of this approval process, which is dialing in the intensity requirements. And in Transport Canada, the technology is approved at 100%, 30%, and 10%. So 10% is the lowest luminous intensity they can be. So that's on a clear event. They can go dial down as low as 10%. With the median kind of at 30%, and then obviously on a unclear situation, they are at 100%. So the final piece of the FAA is waiting on this three-phase or four-phase luminous intensity process. So historically, Technistrobe is telling me the FAA kind of follows along with Transport Canada as their requirements are very similar. And with the approval at Transport Canada in June, they were expecting kind of maybe a 2 to 3 month window, and the FAA would approve this luminous intensity piece. So the technology has been approved, and this is information I've been shared with Technistrobe. The technology has been approved. They're just waiting on this luminous intensity approval.
Okay.
And the phases that the FAA would require, if that helps.
Sure. Are you guys in line with this manufacturer so that if it's improved, you have already put your order in and you wouldn't be waiting a long, long time for the actual equipment to show up?
Correct. So the lead time on this technology is not great. I think it's a few months we could have the technology procured.
Okay. Do you have any sense of how well this technology is received by landowners? Like, have you seen it in use or seen any demonstrations of it being used on a wind facility?
I have not seen it being used. No, I have not witnessed it.
Have you heard any feedback?
I have not from landowners.
Okay. And does it require you guys to have a technician manually adjusting these luminous levels, or does that happen? I was under the understanding when I first learned about this, and it's been a couple years since the vendor was here showing us this technology, but I thought that the lights adjusted automatically based on whatever the conditions demanded. But it sounded to me like it's more of a, from what you described, more of a manual adjustment.
Yeah, and the way I understand it is when they commission these lights, they commission them to whatever that standard is set, which today is by Transport Canada and not the FAA, unfortunately. But the way I am understanding the sites in Canada that have been commissioned, they plug in these parameters so that they fulfill the requirement of Transport Canada.
Right, but is it done, are the lights adjusted manually by employees, or does it happen automatically based on the weather conditions?
By the manufacturer.
Well, yeah, I understand that, but when it's actually up and operating,
yep.
Does it adjust automatically based on the weather conditions?
Yes.
Okay.
It does.
You don't have to have somebody making the adjustments.
Correct. Yep. So once it's commissioned and operational, it'll adjust manually within those parameters.
Okay. All right. I'm guessing you guys have some questions about this technology or other things.
You didn't, so you're leaning toward, I mean, from a cost standpoint, LIDS is the best. LDS is the second best. Is it, just so I'm clear, is LDS the fallback plan or is ADLS the fallback?
There is no LDS.
Commissioner, so we would, our primary objective is, you know, assuming LDS is approved, we would proceed with that. It's in the event it's not approved, or at least not approved in a timely manner, then we would go forward with the currently approved technology of ADLS.
Okay. What is the is LDS? Is that a fairly quick process, or is that the same? Present the same challenges with the FAA and the vendor and getting access to that.
Darren, can you speak to the procurement timeline maybe of both LIDS and ADLS?
Yeah, so the procurement time for the ADLS option is 9 to 12 months, just for the procurement piece. And the LIDS option, I'm being told, is 60 to 90 days, so 2 to 3 months.
Okay.
Okay. Do you have any thoughts, Randy, or questions?
You done, Brian?
Yes, I'm done.
Okay, I'll get the mean one out of the way first. Regarding the alternative, if we do not approve an extension for LIDS, knowing that the lead time is that long for ADLS, but I assume you put it off because of this plan or hope for LIDS, but you didn't file this till October, which almost makes it, based on the lead time you just said, almost hopeless to be done by the end of next year with an ADLS system. Why should we grant an extension as opposed to just saying hurry up and get it done when you can, if that's the route we choose to go, and face whatever consequences for missing the deadline? You've known the deadline for years.
Commissioner Christman, this is Travis Jacobson. And so the big reason that we have pushed it back is we were anticipating that the FAA was going to approve, Darren said in June, Canada approved it, and we were anticipating a 2 to 3 month lag. So for that reason, we've been monitoring it, we've been waiting, then the technology just didn't get approved by the FAA in a timely manner, so we decided to file to request the extension at that point. So that's really the reason, is we had anticipated we would have approval and then the time frame would have worked out fine.
I got a couple more questions.
Sure,
I just want to make a note here, though. Okay, so then continuing on, as for the LIDS system, I'm just going to say, ever since we started learning about these two options, when ADLS seemed to become a possibility, even before FAA had approved it, to me, the LIDS system, I almost dismissed it from my mind because I find it such an inferior solution for the people that are out there having to look at it as opposed to having them off most of the time. And so I guess I'd never had contemplated maybe the price difference so much, but I just did not like that solution. Now, after having watched the ADLS systems that are in place, and my first-hand observation is really on only one of them that I see frequently, I'm pretty disappointed in how that's worked, too. Mm-hmm. So maybe I've opened my mind to trying one of these to see how it works. But tell me what, and the reason I'm disappointed in it is I thought they would be off a lot higher percentage of the time than what they are, although it is getting better. It's mm-hmm. much better now than it was last spring, so maybe it'll keep getting better. But I want to know about your expectations with LIDS, because I don't recall maybe accurately what we should expect. When this is on, or when they are on, let's say at that 30% level on a normal night, how far would you expect to really see them at all?
And that's a very good question. Without, you know, having physically witnessed this technology, I can't speak to that. But the manufacturer is telling us about an eighth of a mile.
So 220 yards.
What good do they do at that point? Like, why would they be on?
A plane can't see them till they're 700 feet away. That it's got to be more than that.
And that's more of at ground level, I would say. They illuminate higher up into the air.
And so,
Randy, then, apparently you're a little too close to the mic. There.
I was trying to accommodate you.
I know.
It's so then, if that would be normal, like on a real clear night, but if our FAA accepted the same standards as the Canadians and went down to 10%, would you be expecting that would be probably something similar?
I would think that would be very similar, yes.
And do I understand this right then? Like the difference between the real clear night using the Canadian standards being at 10% as opposed to normal at 30, are there times then when it's more clear than normal but not extraordinarily clear, when it's maybe at 20, and then the difference from 30 to 100 for, I presume, foggy nights, that it might be at 40 or 50, or it goes all different places, or are there three set spots on these?
The way I understand it, the way Transport Canada approved it, is these three set spots.
Well, I didn't think I would be at this point ever, but if what's an eighth of a mile? I guess maybe 800 feet?
660 feet.
If that's even close to that is the kind of distances, I was always thinking with the LIDS, we were talking everybody within maybe I guess in my mind, I was thinking 3 to 5 miles we're going to see these, which still leaves a lot of people having to look at them all the time. Even if you're just somewhat reasonably close, I think at least one of these is certainly worth an experiment to see how well it would work. Now, I do feel a little bit bad that that means that everyone has to look at them just as bright as they are now for an extra year waiting on this decision, and this isn't necessarily a certainty, but I guess I don't mind venturing out a little bit and trying an experiment here either.
Yeah, and we do probably want to look at the other facilities that are going to be coming, because I would assume that if we do this for these guys, then everyone will want this.
That's why I'm pointing out that I'm viewing this as kind of an experiment.
Mm-hmm.
But
Brian, any thoughts on that from a legal standpoint?
I don't think that the acceptance of this would set any sort of precedence. I think each one would still be reviewed on a case-by-case basis, and different factors are going to be available for you guys to make a decision on those things. So I don't think that it would set precedence to accept it on one and then deny it later on another, as long as there's justification for doing so.
And what would the justification be?
I think things like this that could justify it might be the size of the project, the location of the project, what type of population is located around it as far as, people, maybe other things such as maybe flight patterns, things of that nature. If it's really in a really heavy flight pattern, maybe FAA is not even going to approve it, even for a certain project where it might be approved for wind farms, but depending on where it's at, maybe they would deny it. I don't know. But things like that, I think, would be reasonable considerations in accepting or denying one of these requests.
Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at the timeline, and sorry for jumping around a bit between the technology and your application, but so you're looking for 1 year after the FAA has a decision, or what was the final deadline? December of 2022, having it implemented?
The earlier of the two.
So
if we decide tomorrow, then we'd have 1 year.
1 year, okay, I see. So the latest it would be, I got it. The latest it would be December of 2022, which is a year later than the legislative deadline.
Correct, yep.
So that gives you, looking at the timeline for ADLS, that gives you until about June of next year, you suppose, for a decision by the FAA? Or what are you thinking? How long do you have before you have to just give up? Because there's a 9 to 12 month procurement time for the ADLS.
Darren, do you want to speak to that?
Yeah, and I would think you're very accurate there. We would have to move in one direction or to the other in quarter two of next year.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Question for Brian.
Go ahead, Randy.
I thought I seen it in this filing somewhere, but I'm not seeing it immediately now. Do you agree with MDU that we have the authority to grant a waiver beyond the legislative deadline?
I do. I think it's spelled out in our rules fairly clearly that we can grant, well, not a waiver, but it's an extension of time. They're not asking for a waiver. A waiver, in my mind, would be we can't put anything on this at all. This is just an extension of time that they're requesting. And right in 6906-1102, the last sentence of that is, the commission may grant an extension of time based on technical or economic feasibility considerations. And I believe this request falls under economic feasibility considerations. I think the company has highlighted that it's a benefit and cost savings to their consumers, and quite frankly, I like the deadlines that they built in. It's not a we're going to wait around for this forever. It's very, very definite and spelled out, and I think very clear, and in my mind seems reasonable.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, we don't have to make and shouldn't make a decision today, but just wanted to have a chance to ask questions and get a sense from you guys of what your concerns might be or your openness to this. I obviously don't like the extension just because, you know, these people have been promised this technology for quite a while now, and it feels like empty promises when you grant extensions like this, and just further erodes everybody's belief in government. So I don't like doing that. But I also recognize that this is new technology, all of it, and you know, we were kind of on the cutting edge of all of this to begin with. And even before there was much technology available. So I do think the LIDS version or option would be good to explore. But I am concerned about setting a precedent that every single one of these facilities with a December 2021 deadline will be coming here asking for a extension. In order to wait for this more affordable technology. So those are the things that I'm weighing and are concerned about. I mean, as for the costs, it is a substantial difference in costs. I do grant that. But these wind farms are, I think, for the companies, pretty good deals. And I think that the landowners have to put up with pretty extensive changes to their surroundings when these facilities come in, especially those who don't support it. And in at least the case of Thunder Spirit, there was a fairly decent number of folks who weren't happy about that wind farms coming there. So I think that the cost to me isn't the overriding factor. I think it's worth perhaps considering this from a standpoint of exploring LIDS, making sure we have a system that makes a difference long term everywhere. And if this is a better, how will we ever know if this is better if we don't approve it? So I like it from that standpoint more than the cost, but that is, it's no small potatoes either, that it is a significant cost difference.
I don't think it would be inappropriate to ask the company to forward on, if there's any kind of documentation, I'm not talking about thousands of pages of engineering stuff, but something from the company, promotional material or something that indicates the expectations of visibility at various distances and various conditions, what one might expect with an LIDS, could help form our decision whether to provide an extension and experiment with an alternative.
How would you envision communicating this to people in that area that are thinking the lights are going to be off unless an aircraft approaches? This is different. I think the public's going to be confused. And while they're still not off completely, and why are they on? Do you have any thoughts or a plan on how you would communicate that to the public?
Commissioner Crocious, this is Travis Jacobson. We really haven't developed a formal plan yet. I think we could follow how we did the sighting and, you know, the effect of people around that area. But as of right now, we haven't established a formal plan on communication for either Thunder Spirit or Cedar Hills.
Yeah, I just, you know, I have to wonder, and it was brought up, I'm just trying to, in my mind, think of what public reaction will be. You had touched on that earlier, and I think it's a good, it's a valid question. And then just as a little bit of housekeeping from my notes, because I was apparently scribbling too fast, was the $3 to $3.5 million that was mentioned at the very beginning, is that tied to Thunder Spirit?
That's correct, Commissioner.
Okay.
The price to purchase and install the ADLS at Thunder Spirit is $3 to $3.3 million, and then for Cedar Hills it was $1.5 to $1.7 million.
Okay.
A follow-up on that is, how do you anticipate recovering those costs? I realize this is more of a siting issue, but I want to just explore your thoughts on those additional costs at that facility. How would you anticipate recovering them?
Commissioner Fedorchak, Travis Jacobson again. We have all of our wind farms currently in a rider, so we would anticipate including those costs, both the capital as well as any of the O&M costs in our rider. In North Dakota.
So only North Dakota customers would be covering those, or would it be system-wide?
We would base it on the same factor that everything else is, so it would be an integrated system.
Okay.
So Montana would have their share, South Dakota would as well.
Okay. All right. And also, this is probably for you, Darren. Tell me what the $29,000 to $58,000 annual O&M cost. What is that for? What is that? What triggers that?
So that would be for the manufacturer who is DTEC to come out and maintain the radar unit annually for us. Because it's specialized equipment that we wouldn't have the training to maintain.
All right. And otherwise, the staff would be trained to do everything else that's required for the system?
Correct. So the lights and the sensors in the towers, they would be able to physically maintain. But that radar unit, since it's specialized equipment, we would lean on the manufacturer.
Okay, and it's a fairly, it's almost double the range. Why is that?
And so that's dependent on how many sensors we would need, and DTEC won't know that until they pay a site visit, but they're concerned about Thunder Spirit and its footprint being managed by one radar unit, and that's the idea there.
I see.
It may take...
Sounds good. Thank you.
How long would you amortize this? What would the amortization period of time be?
We would just amortize it over the life of the wind farm. So Cedar Hills is about 10 years old. The estimated life is about 25, so it would be over the remaining 15 years. And Thunder Spirit would be about 20 years remaining.
Okay, and then is there a breakdown in terms of physical equipment versus hardware when you, from a cost standpoint, when you purchase this equipment?
I guess I haven't seen all of the you know, the items in there, they would be unitized just like we do the plant. So there likely would be some software, if you will, that maybe would have a shorter life. But I would anticipate the majority of the equipment would be over the remaining life of the plant.
Okay, does the software, in terms of software updates, is that a part of the package price?
Darren, do you know that?
That I'm not sure of. Good question.
I just don't know of technology that ever lasts more than a few years, and then a vendor's knocking on the door again, and you know, it's another $100,000 to update or whatever. I mean, the pricing can really catch you off guard. It, in my prior life, it certainly did a few times. You know, it looks really good on the front end, and then all of a sudden, three and a half, four years later, the software is outdated. And sometimes it's not because of what the company did. I'm assuming this is, well, this would have to be a homegrown solution, so to speak, not a shelf application.
Okay. I don't have any other questions. Do you, Randy or Brian?
I do not. No, I do not.
Okay. So I think, what was it? Actually, I lied. I have one more question. There was some sort of some timelines written in here for a decision, wasn't there? And Brian or Travis, if you want to speak to that, or Carl, whoever.
As to the request of when we would like a decision, is that
the
question?
Yep.
Yeah, I don't recall any hard deadlines. Just, you know, as you acknowledged, I mean, we're up against a timeline for the end of next year currently. So if the commission would, you know, insist on us proceeding with PBLS, then we'd obviously need to get moving on that as soon as possible, hoping for an extension, of course. But yeah, I mean, we do recognize the current timeline.
Okay. All right. So I think where I would envision going maybe is we'll take what we learned today, have a work session, and talk through this and maybe explore some of these, you know, the pros and cons of it with staff in a work session, then make a decision in the upcoming meeting, hopefully in November timeframe.
If I could ask the company before they...
Randy or Mike.
If I could ask the company before they hang up. Do you have something like I suggested earlier, some kind of promotional material or something that would indicate what kind of visibility one would expect with a LIDS system?
Darren, can you assume we have that?
I do not today, but I can certainly request that as we've kind of developed a close working relationship with the manufacturer. I can see what they'll provide.
If there is something, I'd sure appreciate that. Thanks.
Certainly.
Yeah, that would be great.
And then as well, the, just to get a little more information that maybe it's embedded in the annual maintenance fee, the software question I had.
Excellent. All right. Other than that, so if you guys can get us that information as soon as it's available, then we'll schedule another work session to talk about it and make a decision. So thanks, everybody, for being here. I'll kick it back to you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Anything further from the company?
Nothing further. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any objections to the audio recording of this proceeding now being considered evidence upon which a decision will be reached as it would become a part of the official record? Carl?
No objections.
Brian?
No objections.
Okay, then the evidence as presented will now become a part of the official record upon which a decision will be made. Seeing no other matters, this informal hearing is now closed. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.